Welcome to the Collide Podcast. We're a growing community of everyday chicks colliding with Jesus in our mess, our pain, our joy, and our stories. We value showing up as we truly are, so that's what you'll find here. Walls and masks being torn down so that we can allow Jesus to meet us where we truly are and hear about other women doing the same. We can't wait to collide with you.
I wouldn't know how to love people different from me if Christ hadn't modeled that for me.
Welcome to the Collide Podcast. I'm Willow Weston, the founder and director of Collide, and I am so excited to have Jamie Ossing on the podcast today. Jamie has worked with refugees and immigrants for nearly a decade in the Inland Northwest. For over 7 years, she was on staff as a medical case manager at World Relief, serving newly arrived refugees. Jamie's life with refugees spread into a 5-year journey of her being a single foster mom, starting with 4 refugee children who needed a safe place to live. In Jamie's spare time, she leads the production team at her local church. She plays in the dirt, raises chickens and ducks and dogs. And full disclosure, you guys, Jamie is my cousin. I absolutely love her, admire her, respect her. I used to live with her and her parents when I was in high school. And I'm not having her on today because she's my cousin. I'm having her on because of the amazing heart she has, full of passion and compassion to serve those who need to know they're loved most. And so I think we're going to have a great conversation that will impact all of us. So Jamie,
yeah, thanks for having me
on the podcast today with me. Yeah. Hey, you are so passionate about the topic of refugees. How did this
passion come to be? It kind of came in the back door. After college, I worked with the African Children's Choir and just realized, and then I went to Africa and I was like, I really love hanging out with Africans. And then I was leading a small group of high schoolers who wanted to serve in our community. And it honestly worked out that serving with a resettlement organization was the easiest way as far as scheduling and all the requirements. So we signed up as a volunteer with a family from the Congo, and we just built relationship with them over several months, and we'd read and practice English. And then once my small group stopped, I continued doing that. And I just built relationships with refugees, and they became my friends. And then a job opened up. So it really just started through those relationships and the friendships.
I love how the Lord guides and navigates our lives and takes us on twists and turns that we least expect. That's super cool. I want to start by talking about sort of definitions. Can you, you know, give us some definitions on words you think we need to sort of have a common understanding around before we go into this?
Yeah, there's a lot of confusion because there are so many different types and statuses of immigrant. According to the UN, which is the definition the government works off of, a refugee is, first of all, a human. And I always like to remind people that they're people and they've experienced different things. And what it defined is that they crossed an international border and they fled because of a well-founded fear of persecution based on race, religion, nationality, political opinion, or a membership in a particular social group. So that could be, I worked for the government and now there's a new president and I'm on the opposition side. And so now people are trying to hurt my family. Or it could be, I'm gay in a country where it's illegal to be gay. Or it could be a tribal thing like we saw in Rwanda or what's going on in Burma currently. Sort of the more typical things.
Wow. I mean, I'm kind of stopped. And I'm going to be the most naive interviewer there ever was, but I'm just stopped at the fact that you have to start the definition by reminding us that a refugee.
Yeah, over the years, it's just people forget, like, there's so much fear of people coming in and hurting, especially in America. People are going to hurt us. There's more than we can handle, all these different things. And nobody wakes up and wants to be a refugee. And I've spent time with thousands of them, and all of them would have much rather been able to stay home and just weren't able to do that. We do, though, as we're talking about different groups, there are lots of other types of immigrants. So we've got all the people at the border who are wanting to come into the United States. Some of them, many of them, in fact, qualify under the same rules as a refugee. They had to leave for one of these five reasons. They're not only coming because of the economy or whatever. In fact, the UN doesn't, if you leave your house or your home because of, I just want a better job, or I want my kids to go to school, you don't qualify as a refugee, so you don't qualify for any of the protection. But a lot of the people at the borders do qualify under this definition, but there's not processing in Central and South America. There's also how the law is written is if you are crossing a border with the intent to apply for asylum, it is legal. So there is no document that allows you to do that. You don't have a visa to travel into the country. But if you get into the United States, you can apply for asylum, which is basically saying, I can't go back to my home country and I can prove it and here's why. And it's the same definition. So that's another thing. Like, we hear a lot about people entering illegally, and some of them are, but if their intent is to apply to stay because of this reason, then it's actually legal for them to enter. And once again, we just have to remember they're humans and they want their kids to be safe, just like you and I do. And they want to live past 40 and they don't want to worry about gangs and drugs and bullets and landmines. Like, everyone else wants to not worry about that.
Jamie, what are the greatest misunderstandings you think we as Americans have about people who come to America to live from other countries?
That's a big one. So kind of like I said, there's a lot of people who say they're coming here to hurt us. They're coming here to take our jobs. They're coming here and they're draining the economy or they're causing more problems. For over 70 years, the United States has been welcoming people, starting after World War II, when it was, hey, there's all these orphans. How do we serve them? How can we help? There were kids flown out of Cuba over the years. All the people coming from Vietnam, from the Southeast Asia, all these different things. They're not coming to hurt us. It is, in fact, much easier to get a student visa or a visitor visa. And in fact, any act of terrorism in the United States done by a foreigner has been somebody like that. They had enough money and they could buy a visa. Refugees, on average, it takes them 12 to 17 years to get through the process for admittance. So there's extensive background checking. So we're not just letting anybody in willy-nilly. It's very difficult to get through the program. And less than 0.5% of refugees in the world ever get resettled anywhere. So even a fewer amount get settled to the United States. But most of them want to come and they want to live in peace. One of my close friends is from Rwanda. And she said, we've lived in danger. Why would we want to come here and make other people afraid? Like, I just want my kids to live and go to school and be happy, you know, be safe, like not even happy, just safe. Here where I live in Eastern Washington, most of the refugees are working in the hotel industry, cleaning hotel rooms. So I don't know very many Americans who are applying to clean toilets at midnight. So they're not actually taking jobs away from Americans, but we have dozens of employers who prefer to hire former refugees because they work really hard and they stay out of trouble.
It's so interesting just to hear you talk. I've heard you say before that Jesus was a refugee. Tell us more about what you mean.
Yeah. So when Jesus was born in Bethlehem, you know, we kind of all know that story. Then the king heard that there was this new king and he said, we're going to kill all the baby boys under 2 years old. And so Joseph and Mary were like, we are not going to let that happen. We're going to leave. And they went to Egypt. They crossed an international border for that well-founded fear based on their race and ethnicity. And all of that. So they were personally being targeted because of the member of the people group, and they crossed an international border. And in the Gospels, it's really just one or two sentences, sort of like, and they went to Egypt. And then when the time came, they came back. But it wasn't a day or a week. It was more than likely a couple of years. And so Jesus and his parents literally fled their country for this purpose, and they lived as outsiders in another country before they were able to return. And every refugee living in a refugee camp wants to go home. They don't ever, like, their first choice isn't to go to America, it's to go home. And Jesus was able to go home, and obviously that was part of God's plan, but most refugees are not able to do that.
It's so interesting. When you think about that, when you think about Jesus being a refugee, how do you see that experience shaping the way you see him ministering to the foreigner in the New Testament when you collide with him?
Yeah, all throughout the Bible, Old and New Testament, God says, care for the orphan and the widow. And more often than not, he says, and the foreigner. And it's really easy, I think, for Americans to go, of course, we should care for orphans and widows. And then it gets a little gray because we care about what their documents say, whether or not we should care for the foreigner. But Jesus lived as a foreigner. And as he was traveling throughout Israel, there were all, you know, he's interacting with Samaritans, and Apostle Paul and the disciples, they're interacting with Greek and all of these people from all over the world. And there's never been a time where Jesus was like, check their paperwork, or don't love them if they speak a different language, or if it's really hard to communicate, or if your religion is different. That's never what we see Jesus doing throughout his life, is love people, love people, love people. And I always wonder, like, when he went to Egypt, you know, I doubt he remembered he was a baby, but like, how were his parents treated when they were in Egypt and probably did not speak the language and probably did not know all the customs and cultures? And so when I am with my clients or with more of them who have just become friends, I wonder, like, if this was Jesus or Mary or Joseph, how would I treat him? And why would it be different if it's not?
You just kind of listed off some behaviors or beliefs that are harmful. And I'm wondering if you can list off a few more that we kind of live into as a result of our myths and misunderstandings around refugees.
Yeah, a lot of it is... just attitude of, are they welcome? Are people with limited English welcome in my church or in my business? Do I treat them the same as I treat a white person or an American-born person, or do I treat them differently? Even from day one, when I'm talking to my kids about people who are different from us, how do I speak? I had foster kids. I had some from Africa and then some who were American born. And a 4-year-old looked me in the face and said, my daddy said that we should not like black people because they're bad, while we had an African young man sitting at the dinner table. And that 4-year-old didn't come up with this idea on her own. And this is about people with any differences, skin color, religion, disabilities, not only just being born in a different country, but how do I teach people? How do I teach my kids? How do I interact with people? How do I assist people at the grocery store? I get stopped a lot at the grocery store. I'll have women come up to me and they're like, which one is shampoo? Because in their country, you get a bar of soap and you use it for laundry and dishes and the shower and everything. And we have 2 whole aisles dedicated to different types of soap. So am I approachable in public? And a lot of these are former clients who will come up to me and ask me because they know me. But when I am on the bus or when I see somebody who's struggling because of the language, do I pull away, or do I have compassion, or do I see if I can help, or do I care? And sometimes just going from neutral to now I care is a big step for people, even if you don't have the courage to, like, I'm going to step in and help this person, but like, I'm acknowledging that this person has a different life story than I do.
Jamie, I'm just thinking about you being this youth leader and you're looking for a service project and you end up, you know, God kind of plops this opportunity to work with this settlement group you and your youth kids from church, and then a job opens up with World Relief, and your perspective had to have changed over the years. How would you describe what that was like for you, from kind of falling into getting to know foreigners to now being able to communicate to us what you're communicating to us today?
It was very much God, and it was kind of slow and really without me noticing. So where I grew up, and Willow, you know this since you lived here, it's very white, just because that's who's here. We have a very large Slavic population, but not a lot of African Americans or any other diversity. And I remember very clearly being 6 years old and interacting with a Black person in person for the first time, and having like all these questions, just because I didn't know, like it just had never come up in my world. And there's not like, we didn't travel internationally as a kid, so I just wasn't exposed to it. But I fell in love with the African Children's Choir when I was younger, and then spent a year and a half on the road with them and just built great friendships with people from all over the world. And then I was like, this is what I want to do. When I get a grown-up job after grad school, I want to be able to work with people who aren't from here. But as I was volunteering, I just was able to ask questions and learn so much about different cultures and communities, and how do you welcome people into your home, and how do you do meals, and how do you do parenting? And there's a lot of things that were great and a lot of things that I didn't want to do in my life because it's not what I'm comfortable with or not my preference or whatever. But it really opened my eyes to so much beauty in the world, and how God works in the Congo, and how he works in Burma, and how he works in Afghanistan, and how he works here in Spokane.
It sounds like it's been an extremely transformational journey, and I love that you're sharing that with us so we can be transformed too. You, one of my favorite things when we get a catch up is hearing you tell stories about your experiences with these people you've been working with and befriending now for years. I mean, you have stories from, like, you know, women giving birth in the hospital and just all sorts of stories. Can you share a few that you now look back and say, wow, God really showed up in that friendship, in that moment when your work with World Relief was truly impacting lives? I mean, what are some of the cool stories that you would love to share with us?
I do love telling stories, and it often gets me in trouble because I take up all the time.
You're on a podcast. But, you're cool.
Good. I work with people from all over the world, every, like, religions I had never even heard of, languages I had never even heard of, all sorts of things. And there was a woman who came with her husband, and they were from the same country, but a different tribe. And it had kind of always been abusive. And then finally she was able to leave. They didn't have kids. And she kind of got up that courage, as we know is very difficult. But then her depression was terrible. And more than once she attempted suicide. But every time she did, she would call me and tell me. And I would call the, you know, first responders, and we'd take her to the hospital and do all that. And the last time she texted me, and she just said, hey, thanks for everything. You can give all my furniture to World Relief. Here's my brother's phone number. She didn't even say goodbye. But I went, I called 911, dropped what I was doing, called the landlord so we could get in the house, met her at her apartment, went, and I sat in the ER with her for like 8 or 10 hours and just loved her and prayed with her. And then, and that was honestly the last time that it was that bad, because we've just been able to talk. And I'm like, you faced genocide. You should be having nightmares. This is a normal response. Your brain is not built for handling this. But this is what I know of God and how God loves you. And just was able to share God's love with her. And he showed up, and she has listened to church online. Like, it's not like, yay, she's a believer now and everything's perfect, but she's working and she's doing really well, and she's healthy and she's stable. And for whatever reason, I was her person who she always would contact when she was that low. And I don't think that was an accident. One of my other favorite stories is of a gentleman from Sri Lanka, and when refugees are coming, we'll get about 2 to 6 weeks notice. So we found out this guy was coming all alone. He doesn't have any relatives or friends in the United States, let alone in our area. And he speaks a very rare language. And he speaks 4 or 5 languages, but the one he's fluent in is pretty rare. But he has chronic renal failure. He's an end-stage kidney failure. And part of me, like, I love my job because I get to learn things about medicine. I'm like, how can you be in kidney failure for 10 years? Like, at some point, they'd stop. So we went and picked him up. He's like 95 pounds, this tiny little guy at the airport. And I drove him straight to the ER. Because we had to get him on dialysis. And he spoke a little bit of English. His first name and last name are both like 15 letters long. And I can spell it forward and backwards and all these things. But over the last 5 or 6 years, I'm his emergency contact at the hospital. So when we were spending years and years working on dialysis and transportation, I was the one who would get those calls and I'd go visit him in the hospital. And about 2 years ago now, I was in a meeting with another client and I got a call from the hospital and I declined it. And then they called right back and I was like, uh-oh. And they said, hey, Jamie, this is the chaplain. And I was like, uh-oh. And they said, do you know? And they tried to say his name and never can say his name. And I was like, yep, I know him. Don't worry. And they said, well, his heart stopped twice. So we transferred him to this hospital, but we don't know anything about him. So I helped, I met him at the hospital and he was so happy when he saw me. He has friends over the years, some people from different churches have built pretty good relationships with him, but I was still his medical person and his English is pretty good by now. But even people with good English don't always understand medical things. So I spent the whole day in the hospital room with him doing English to English interpretation. And the nurses would make fun of me, but they're like, but we can't communicate without it. But literally they're saying stuff in English and then I'm just saying it in different English words so that he understood what's going on. So I spent that day. And then the next day he ended up getting a pacemaker. So I helped do all that paperwork. But I had this moment of what happens if he dies? Who's going to tell his family? Do I just go through his Facebook friends? Their names are all in a different language. I don't even know who his mother is. But before he went in for his pacemaker, he said, this is my brother's phone number. I need you to call him if anything happens. I was like, does he speak English? What country is he? Details you don't normally have to think about, but really became a common thing in my life. Anyway, came out of surgery, doing great. Everything's fine. And then a couple months later, after 5 years of waiting, he got a call for a kidney. And he called me at 7 o'clock on the Sunday night. He's like, they're doing surgery at 10. Can you be here? And I'm like, it's Sunday night. Who does surgery on a Sunday night? I didn't even know that was a thing. So I went and he gave me his phone and he said, here's the passcode. This is my brother. He's going to be calling you and texting you. So for 7 hours all through the night, I was answering phone calls from all over the world and texting. His brother spoke English, so I would give him updates and then he would call their parents. And I just sat in the hospital for hours and hours by myself. It's the middle of the night. And I'll never forget when you wake up after these surgeries, they give you such funky drugs that it causes your dreams to be really weird and you're intubated. So he's tied down when he wakes up and he's got all these machines and everything and he freaked out, which everyone does. And I said, I'm here. It's Jamie. And he calmed right down and he grabbed my arm with both hands. And I just remember going this is my opportunity to be Jesus with him. He does not come from a country that talks about Jesus. He's heard a lot about Jesus here, but this is what I can do is I can make sure that he knows he's safe and loved after this massive surgery. And he held on to me for probably 15 minutes. And then, but anytime he was intubated, I would make sure I was there when they took it out because he would wake up so afraid. And there were all these doctors who didn't know him and couldn't pronounce his name because we had built this relationship over all these years. It was just amazing and just humbling of all the people he wanted to be, he picked me and God picked me to be in this spot. And unfortunately, I have his his brother's phone numbers in my phone just in case anything were to happen. Like, we had to have a practical plan of what to happen. He's doing really well now. He's super healthy. His kidney's working great. He became a citizen last year, and I got to be with him at his naturalization ceremony, and he was so proud of that. And he's healthy enough now that he's looking for work and just kind of rocking life now. But it was just such, it was a long journey and a lot of scary things. And he still will call or text me. He's like, "Hey, I'm going to the hospital." Okay. And for a while I was like, "What's wrong? Do you need me?" He's like, "No, I just wanted to let you know, like, I'm fine. Everything's handled, but you should know that I'm there in case they call you." But just like, he'd have me over for dinner, and just like beautiful relationship that happens with this tiny little Sri Lankan man. You can't get that with your American born neighbors, who I also love. It's not that I don't love my American born friends, but it's just such a beautiful picture of all the different people that God loves.
Man, you have me tearing up over here, cousin.
I think you even also heard that story already.
But I am. I'm emotional because I just feel like the world needs more people like you. And we need to be living in and leaning into the kind of work that you've been doing. And I think the thing that really strikes me as you're talking, and I'm just curious if you can try to describe it for us, but you don't just get those calls, right? Like, I've been called when people are suicidal, but you don't just get those calls unless you've put in investment after investment after investment into a relationship to the point where you've built a trust and you've earned the right to be that person that can help people in dire need. What kind of investments did it take over the years in relationships with these people for you to earn that place in their life?
I think what I found more and more in doing this work is that people are the same everywhere. Everybody wants to be known. Everybody wants to be loved. Every mother wants their kids to be safe. Like, we're really not different at the core of who we are. And so it's sitting and having tea with somebody, or eating food that is way too spicy for me and being laughed at, or like going, like, I sometimes would just go to soccer games to watch the kids play, and 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 high school guys would come off the field to say hi to me. Because soccer is what they can do. They know how to play soccer. But just showing up in those moments. And I didn't only get calls for the scary things. Like, I got, "Jamie, can you take me to the hospital? I'm in labor." Or, "Can you come to my wedding?" And all of the, like, the big and the beautiful things. And just the Thursdays of, "I'm really struggling right now because my husband is sick and I don't know what to do." Like, all of us have these huge, great things and these terrible crises, and then the regular thing. And just like any relationship, the more time you put in and the more somebody feels loved, like, it's not rocket science to love somebody different from you because they inherently want the same things that you do, which is to feel cared for.
Wow. You said when you were in the hospital with the Sri Lankan man, Sri Lankan,
mm-hmm.
Which one is it?
Sri Lankan.
Thank you for teaching me all things today. You were in the hospital with the Sri Lankan man, and he grabbed your hands, and you had this moment where you realized that you can be Jesus to him. When you say that, tell us how you see Jesus when he collided with people in the New Testament. How do you see him being with the foreigner? I know you already said he was a refugee himself, but how do you actually see him colliding with the foreigner and being?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the biggest example is the Samaritan woman at the well. Like, culturally, the Jews and the Samaritans didn't interact. The Samaritans were sort of outcasts of the community, different, considered a different race. They had totally different cultures. And then on top of that, this woman was renowned for her sin. And Jesus didn't, he easily could have avoided the town. He could have avoided the whole region, but he didn't. He pursued her and in the heat of the day sat down with her and had a conversation and didn't cast her down, didn't make her feel bad. But just the fact that he spoke to her as a man speaking to a woman showed the world that that was okay. And the fact that she was a different race showed the world that that was okay. Like, regardless of, "Hey, I can offer you living water and I forgive you of your sins." Just that model of people are different and that's okay. And God loves all of those people is such a huge thing. And when I grew up, everybody I knew was white. And now I have, like, it is rare for me to be the majority in the room. Almost all of the dinner parties I go to, I'm like the only person who could be president. Like, all of them are naturalized Americans, but none of them could, or their children. It's like anybody under six and me is it. Or I went, some good friends of mine are from Burkina Faso in West Africa, and I took them to the hospital when she was having her baby. And the nurse was like, who's this? And her husband was really stressed out and goes, she's family, she's coming. And the nurse was real confused. But like, just, we clearly don't, these people are over 6 feet tall and I'm like almost 5'4". So we do not look the same. I don't speak French. We have nothing in common other than we love each other. And I wouldn't know how to love people different from me if Christ hadn't modeled that for me.
I love that so much. Hey, you did this work, you know, vocationally, but I think what's really fascinating about you is it's actually become a way of life. This isn't something, you're not on here because you work for an organization and you're tooting their horn or pointing at their website. You, in fact, I don't know if it's okay that I say this, but you actually just lost your job with that organization because they're losing funding, correct?
Yep. Between the changes in the refugee program and COVID, I did lose my job recently.
I think what people need to hear is you're not on here with an agenda. This has actually become who you are. And I think it'd be super cool if you could share some of the ways that this isn't a job for you. You've actually invited refugees into your life and home. And tell us about that and tell us how that's blessed you.
Yeah. Well, as I said, like, very few of my friends are white or born here in America. A couple years ago, made a new friend at church and I was like, you're my only white friend. It was very exciting to have a white friend. because none of my friends are, and I love them all dearly, but I do stick out in all of our pictures. And people, like, when they have babies, the nurses get really confused when I show up and they're like, no, this is my baby's aunt. And they're like, I don't know what you're talking about. anyway, I will claim them every day for the rest of my life. And I love it. Yeah, it is. So at church, it's also quite funny. So a year or two ago, we had a family come in and the woman was wearing a hijab and somebody from our church who knows me came and got me and they're like, your friends are here. And I was like, what? And they're like, yeah, they're over there. I'm like, I've never seen those people before in my life. But I appreciate that people at church go, there's somebody here who's clearly not American born and Jamie knows them. And I went over and I had a chat with them and a lot of people aren't comfortable with that. And a lot of people in my world are learning how to be comfortable with that. But it's hard to start up a conversation with any stranger. But especially when you walk up going, I don't even know if you speak English, it's extra hard to go like, hey, welcome to church or whatever it is. I also get a lot of calls of, hey, could you tell me how to pronounce this name? It's not American. And these are people, again, maybe I haven't even met them, but I have a little bit of context for their culture or I can take a guess from where they're from. But yeah, there's just so many amazing things. Like, I've had, as you said at the beginning, I was a foster parent for several years. And what happened was a client, single mom, got really, really sick and had to go to the hospital. And so the kids were going to go into foster care and they'd only been here a couple months and really didn't speak English. And I said, I'll take them home for the weekend. And they stayed for 11 months. But they, while all of this, while mom was getting healthy and getting services and everything, but, they needed a safe place to go and they didn't know anybody. And in Washington, if a kid goes into foster care and there's an adult that they already know who can pass a background check and everything, they can go with that person that they know instead of going with a stranger. And the likelihood that four kids would have stayed together is very small. So I mean, Willow, you lived with us in the basement, and it sort of was a joke growing up. Like, there's always people living in our basement. And so when I had my own house, like, of course there's going to, like, somebody needs a place to stay. It's not rocket science. I have an empty room, you know, and it's, I'm not saying invite every stranger you ever meet to live with you. But like, I know these people and I know that they're safe and I know, you know, this is appropriate for my life at the time. So I've actually had people from several different countries live with me over the years. And some of them were former refugees. One of the women I volunteered with 10 years ago is a really close friend of mine, and her son needed a place to live. So he lived with me for a while. I had another teenager, an African teenager, who it was just really hard at home, and they were trying to keep him out of foster care as well, mostly because they just weren't understanding each other. So he lived here for a while because I have this space. And again, it was safe and appropriate for where I am. But just welcoming people into my life and into my world. And now I've been like, all my friends call me when they're in labor because I'm like the doula of all of the people now. And one of my good friends from Iraq had a baby 2 years ago, and her mom was here, who doesn't speak any English. And, you know, she's in labor, but it was going to be a while. And she goes, "Can you take my mom home so you guys can get some sleep?" And I was like, sure. I have like 10 words in Arabic. She knows 10 words in English. And so every hour or two, she'd come wake me up. "Baby, baby, baby." "No, no, mama." Like, but I got to be there when her baby was born. Like, I get to be the aunt to all of these kids. And there's a Syrian mom who I got to know really well. And she had to go to Seattle and have surgery. And so I drove her over the first time, and we actually stayed with my uncle, who again was like, "We have space. You can stay here for free for a couple days so she can get the medical care she needs." And they've actually made 4 or 5 trips to Seattle. And my uncle has said, "Come stay in the basement," because that's what he could do to help this family. And this, like, all of these people have become so close to me just as friend, not like, "This is my Syrian friend," or "These are my friends who used to be refugees." Like, these are just my people. And I, like, my brother is a lot younger than me, and he's learned a lot about, like, oh, people can be really different from me, and we can just love them. And I hope that everybody I'm interacting with is picking up that, like, everybody's different from us and everybody's exactly the same.
Jamie, I know that all of those relationships have blessed you in a lot of ways. I also know that many of them have required a lot from you. I know it's required sacrifice. I know it's required time and energy and investment and giving and pouring out and money. I mean, I know there's that side to all of this. I'm just thinking about people who are listening though, and they're feeling challenged. They're feeling challenged by the love of Jesus and the radical call to love foreigners like he calls us to. I'm thinking about the people who are listening to your stories and they feel inspired, and maybe they have no idea where to start. And it feels like a common myth is that there's really nothing we can do, or we don't know what to do, so we do nothing. If there are people listening who want to lean into the work of investing in helping refugees, or they want to make friends with refugees and be around people different than them, they want to begin loving them like Jesus, what's your advice on how they can lean into doing that?
Yeah, absolutely. For me, kind of like I said, I just sort of fell into it. There are refugees in every state in the United States and in many countries, whether they're living there as refugees or they were resettled there. There are also international students who don't have anywhere to go for holidays or don't have friends here, or other immigrants or people on work visas that you can invest in. You can always start by looking up refugee resettlement agencies such as World Relief. There are 9 of them in the United States. And again, they're in every single state, and asking how you can get involved. There are some great books out there. One of them came out about 2 years ago. It's called Seeking Refuge. And it is about the refugee crisis in the 21st century, in like 2016 to 2018. So it's talking specifically about what was going on in Syria. And it talked a lot of from a biblical standpoint of like, what does God say about this and how to do that? There's so many great books out there about the journeys of refugees and all these things. There's a blog that I love that comes out once a week and it takes like 4 minutes to read. And you can find it on encounteringislam.com. And it's this guy in Colorado who just says, here's how to connect with Muslims. And so he'll write about, like, right now is Ramadan, which is their sort of holy month. So it's just good information. But then if and when you encounter people and start building a relationship, you can say, how do you celebrate Ramadan? Like, tell me about this thing. Like, I'm going to share Christmas with you. Can you share Eid with me? And all of that comes from just relationship and spending time together. And I mean, from all of my people, pretty much everyone, every culture in the world is more hospitable and welcoming than we are, especially in the West, like in the United States and Western Europe. So they want to spend time and they want you to come over to their house. Generally speaking, again, don't invite yourself over. But build some relationship, like hang out on a soccer field. We had a soccer game going and like immigrants popped out of the woodworks just in the neighborhood because, hey, there's soccer happening. But all of it starts with seeking God, for those of you who are believers, and finding his heart, but just talking to people and building relationships. Like, I did not expect to work in the field. I did not expect to spend my vacation time visiting refugee camps. I just wanted to make a friend who was from Congo. And now most of my closest friends are from other countries. So it can be really simple to get started, but call up your local university, see if there's any international students, find a refugee resettlement organization, see if there's kids in your elementary school or middle school who need English tutors. Like, those are all really simple ways. And for most of you listening to this, you already have the skill of what most of the refugees need, which is you speak English. And you can learn and teach English by just hanging out at the park and going, this is grass and this is a tree. And then they'll teach you words that you'll mispronounce probably for the rest of your life. And it will be grand.
Well, Jamie, I couldn't be prouder to be related to you. But on a serious note, I'm just so grateful for you. I'm grateful for your love of Jesus and the way you pursue him and try to live like him. And you are. You inspire me, and I know that the people listening feel inspired and challenged. And so thank you for hanging out with us, making space to share your story with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Like you said, this is kind of just how my life is now, and I love it. And I hope more people can step into it and get to know other people the way that I've come to know
them. That's awesome. For those of you guys listening, we're going to try to get a lot of those links that Jamie mentioned at the end in the show notes so that you can check out the books and blogs and World Relief Organization's information. All of that hopefully will be on the show notes so that you can lean into that. And I look forward to hanging out with you guys next week. This week, my hope for you is that you would open your heart up to the heart of Jesus and then begin to live more and more like him in this world, loving those who need to know they're loved. Keep colliding, and we'll catch you next week.
Thanks for tuning in. To keep up with us, you can find us on Instagram at we.collide, on Facebook as at wecollidewomen, and you can also visit our website at wecollide.net to find our blog, resources, event information, and more. One last thing. If you enjoyed this episode, would you take a few seconds and leave us a review? It seems like such a small act, but reviews help us to keep producing this content and help other women find it too. Thanks so much for tuning in to today's episode and letting us walk with you as you seek and collide with Jesus.